Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Shoes Off Inside with me, May Lee, Kelly Hu, Tamlin Tamita. Hi, ladies.
Hello. Happy New Year.
I know, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Last time we did an episode was doing our holiday favorite things right before Christmas Correct. And the holidays. Correct. And now here we are in the new year, 2024. How's everyone feeling in the new year?
I'm a little stressed because I bought this new house in Vegas.
Yes,
which you know, and now I've got two houses that I have to fix up because I have to fix up this old one still. And then, you know, not working since the strike.
Yeah,
you know, it's been really dry, and I'm not so much worried about financially as like I'm worried like have I forgotten how to act. After all,
oh come on!
Oh my god!
Like to be horrible.
But also your next season of BFD is coming out, so you got to work that muscle too, that PR muscle. So again, you're always in the middle place of everything. So I understand what you're feeling, but also it's the big move, you know, to Vegas.
Yeah, BMF, right? Black Mafia. Yeah.
Because that our show premieres on the 1st of March.
So there you go. Yeah. So the whole month of February
that's
is
right.
dedicated.
All PR.
That's right. Yeah. So you will be busy. You will be busy.
Yeah. I've been busy.
Yeah.
Yay.
And Tamlin, I know the last Airbender is about to come out, isn't it?
Yes. Woo. Airbender is coming out in February 24th. I think Monarch Legacy of Monsters just finished its 10 episodes. And then Blue-Eyed Samurai is out. And so those two projects are out on Netflix. So those are, so it was a nice little, you know, season of little things that I got to do. But then, you know, for May and Kelly to see Daniel and I in Spring Awakening over at East West Players before Christmas was really a lovely, lovely act of sisterhood.
Absolutely.
And now it's like 2024 and we've got the elections coming up. We've got, New Year's of the dragon.
Yeah, the dragon.
You being a Korean American, what does it mean that it's the year of the blue dragon?
I saw that on social media today, somebody else asking that question. And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the color.
Okay.
You know, we all have elements. We all have elements.
Yeah,
wood,
metal. And I thought
Zodiac too? Koreans?
Oh, yeah. The lunar? Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that you guys, I thought that was only a Chinese thing.
No.
I think it's all Asian countries except the Philippines and Japan.
Yeah. Yep.
And they did both Zodiac.
The Zodiac. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm the Zodiac. I'm the year of in Korean. I'm the year of the white horse. In Chinese, it's fire horse, and that only happens every 60 years.
Right.
So we definitely follow the Chinese zodiac. But So 2024. Yeah. So for me, it ended a little rough and then it started rough, but it's gotten better. And I have a lot more focus and clarity on so many different things. So I'm definitely trying to focus on the most important things that matter to me and kind of let go of all this other shit that we get so worked up about. And you know what that includes? Now, this might be difficult in this election year. I have definitely weaned myself off of watching and listening to the news as much as I used to.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah. You know how hard that is for me.
I used to be obsessed.
Yeah, no, but that's really hard for me. But I've got to tell you, the first, I don't now immediately turn on the news and leave it on. And even in the car, I try not to listen to the news as much as possible. Now, this is an experiment for me, but it's working so far.
I'm so glad that you're doing this because there was a moment when you and I first connected where I was really worried for you. I remember you on your kitchen floor, huddled up next to your oven.
That was during the election.
Tears.
That was during the election.
Sorry?
It was during the election, right?
During the election.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I just thought she is going to break. I was really worried that oven was right there. I was worried that the door was going to come in. Your head was going to get, I mean,
No. It wasn't that extreme, but yes, you did notice that. And that's how it can get to me. Now I'm a news person. So of course, you know, I like to be informed, but I've realized I don't have to be informed 24/7. It's not like I'm going to miss anything. If something earth shattering happens, or if there's something important that I need to know, I'm going to hear about it and I'm going to see it. So This is good. It's a good start to me trying to go through, you know, sort of weeding stuff out of my life that really is so toxic in so many ways.
Bravo to you.
Things that are not toxic is our guest today on the show. Ah. Far from toxic. 180
degrees from toxic.
180 from toxic. And we are talking about the one and only Daniel Henney.
Wow.
Wowza. In so many ways. But here's the thing. Look, Kelly's speechless right now. She can't even speak.
I mean, if I was a fan before, after doing this interview, what a great guy.
Okay, so Kelly's obviously giving away the fact that we've already done the interview, so now we're going to be introducing the interview that we just did, because that's kind of how we put the show together. So we just finished the interview with Daniel Henney. Daniel is somebody I've known since 2007 when we first met in Asia, and so we've been friends since. But he is salt of the earth, Midwestern boy from Michigan. Hugely popular, famous in Korea, all of Asia, and globally, because of his acting and his modeling and all of that. But he is a guy who truly has remained, you know, grounded in every way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because he lays on the ground with his dog.
Exactly. Huge dog lover.
Doggy daddy.
Huge dog lover. Yes, and you're going to hear all about what he has done for dogs and rescuing dogs, and some things that have been happening in South Korea lately, and very recently. But this was a comprehensive interview with Daniel Henney, who is really one of my favorite people. So here is that interview.
I didn't know this was going to be a four people thing. And then I did a little research and I found out that it was, and I'm so pumped because I'm obviously, I love you, May, and we go back a long way, but I'm a huge fan of both of you. Absolutely, no bullshit.
Thank you. Oh, Kelly, my God.
We're part of the X-Men world.
Yes.
Together.
Thank you.
I was a fan of Death Strike, and I thought you did a fantastic job.
Yes.
Tamlin, I have to tell you, a Karate Kid Part 2 affected me greatly.
Like it did so many people.
Oh my God. You're so kind, and you're so, and I May, are you recording?
I am.
Okay. Because when I first met Daniel Henney in person, it was for a screening, if not the premiere, of his love story movie that Janet Yang produced.
Yeah. Shanghai Calling.
I was going Shanghai Rising, Shanghai. Yeah. So I couldn't remember. Again, May and I were talking about today's show, and she says, "Oh yeah, my good friend Daniel Henney," and I go, "La la 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 la," because to meet, you know, our movie star idols in person, I don't care who you are, it's like when you saw Brie Larson meet Jennifer Lopez. I was like, "Oh my God, bow down to you, bow down."
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was recent.
And then you have been a topic of many conversations over the years, ever since your introduction to, you know, this world, and not just specifically the Asian American world. It's like, all right, on their very best days, who would you rather be with? Russell Wong, Daniel Henney, Henry Golding, and now for the Gen Z kids, it's Darren Barnett from Never Have I Ever. So it's like all you beautiful Hoppa men. It's like, oh, that's a hard decision. Right? Yeah. So you have been in my imagination and many others' imagination for a very long time, and we just love, you know, watching you ascend and rise and finding your voice and finding your way through these very complicated.
I almost want to ask you what in your imagination were you thinking about Daniel? But we won't go there.
I'll tell you. Okay. It was the Korean commercial where they use, it's just a simple commercial. And I think you blew up with the series of commercials with Gwyneth Paltrow, but there is another, it's just Daniel Henney in a bar, and it's that old school R&B song. What is that song?
Tell us, Daniel, you know, he's waiting for you to like stumble.
I know.
There's been a few commercials. I've been very lucky in the commercial world in Korea. So there's a bunch of them, but I did a beer commercial 3 or 4 years ago with, What's that song? Is it Way Down? The Way Down We Go. It's kind of like a jazzy song.
Yeah. That one too. But it's just you waiting for her at the bar. And
I kind of remember that. I do a lot of that.
I just wait at bars by myself, you know, drinking a martini. I'm really that guy. That's it's so funny to me because there's this image of like, you know, especially in Korea.
You know what? And you're selling the product, and you're selling the product. And every single time my mother and I go to the Galleria, which is the Korean supermarket here in Northridge, there's a coffee brand. It's like, oh, I got to buy this coffee because Daniel's on it.
Well, Daniel,
did you start your career doing commercials?
It's a long story short. I was doing like JCPenney and Kohl's ads in the States as a model. I went to an open call with my mom. She took my pictures in the basement with a black and white camera. And I like posed with, I had like frosted tips, like self frosted tips. That was cool back then. I did like those things, took my pictures to an open model call. And, they were excited about me signing with an agency. So I did, I had no idea what I was doing. And I signed with an agency in Chicago called Suzanne's.
How old were you?
I was 20.
Oh, okay.
Suzanne's A+ talent. And I started doing some like print jobs. Long story short, they got bought out by Ford. I got picked up. And then a scout came from Hong Kong. And I went to Hong Kong and started working in commercials and other modeling, runway and stuff like that.
Well, but your ethnicity is what?
My mom is Korean, 4'10", firecracker Korean. And my father is now, because he did 23andMe, he knows he's like English and Nordic, which he really likes the Nordic part of it.
Ah, okay. That's where the height comes from for you, Daniel.
I guess that's what
your dad. Yeah. He's 6'2"? Are you 6'2"?
Yeah, no, I'm 6'2". My dad is 5'10".
Ah, okay. Cool. Okay. Yes.
So we don't know. It's a mystery.
Well, here's the thing. So I was saying before, and then you guys yelled at me for not starting to record. So now I'm recording. I was saying that Daniel and I first met in, I think it was 2007 or eight in Sydney, Australia, because we were both invited. Oh. We were both invited to the Moët Chandon. Moët Hennessy. Yes, it was an event by Moët Chandon down in Sydney. Very swanky. Daniel was, of course, you know, invited as a superstar. I was invited. I'm not sure why I was invited. I think they thought like I was like the Asian Oprah or something like that. But that's when I was able to interview Daniel for the first time. Yeah. And I met him for the first time. And I've told this story to an audience before. Never have I ever met somebody in person who literally took my breath away when he walked in the door.
Wow.
I hadn't showered that morning. I was a little.
I was like choking.
It was more like a.
You really did. I remember sitting there going, "Oh my god, how am I gonna fucking do this interview and not be distracted?" But I will say, because I was a professional, the interview was great. And what I loved about Daniel from that in the interview was that he was so, you were so down to earth.
Yep.
So real, unaffected.
I concur.
And years, remember that was 2007, 2008 and to now, because Daniel and I just went to a Clippers game a couple weeks ago and he is exactly the same. You are exactly the same.
So you guys started your friendship right after that interview.
I mean, I think, It was nice for me too, because I had been working in Korea for 3 or 4 years at that point. Things had gone pretty crazy over there. I was on a show called My name is, or my lovely's Hamsoon is a Korean drama.
Yeah.
And it really took off. And so as you guys probably know, in Asia, the fans are really intense.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of in this vacuum for a while, and meeting May was like, it was just nice to sit down and do an English interview, like a proper English interview.
Yeah.
We connected. So, it was the first time someone had asked me about my past and my mom and the journey with real interest. It was less about like, you know, the outside stuff, the looks and the projects, more about like who I was as a person. So it was nice.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. I'm just going to say one thing. When you're interviewed by somebody who understands your background because they've lived it too, that's where it makes a difference. And that's where representation makes such a difference in media, as an interviewer, as a journalist, as an actor, you know, all of that. It's like when you understand somebody's story because you are that as well, it makes such a difference in having a conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Sorry, Kelly, go ahead.
I was going to ask, did you grow up speaking Korean?
No, my mom still can't speak. So I grew up in, my white side was big when I was younger. I grew up in an all white town, about 900 people, 4 churches, one McDonald's. And I'm talking town, 30 miles
apart.
Town, 30 miles from fields.
Wow.
It's still a deer hunting season off from school, if that's any indication.
Yeah.
So I went to Hong Kong first. I lived there for 2 years. I was working the Asian circuit as a model. And then I ended up in Korea in 2005, got lucky and got cast in that drama. But that's when I started to learn Korean.
Drama without being able to speak the language.
He was a Korean-American in the drama.
Yeah. They were looking for a character that was kind of like, he'd come from the States. He was a doctor.
Yep. Yeah.
And I had just done a commercial there that was pretty popular. That was... At that time, commercials weren't being shown before movies and theaters. That was the first commercial that was shown like during the trailers in theaters. So it kind of got some pop from that. And so they knew my face and so it helped me out a little bit.
Yeah, I totally remember you coming out because of that fact that you were an American of Korean descent and that they made the Korean TV, television industry, whatever you want to call it, made room for you because they wanted to be able to cross the bridge and recognize what it means to be Korean and what it also means to be Korean American, who has a desire, an interest, a love to be able to go back to his or her homeland and create the stories there. I think Korea has that mark on their side, is that, you know, trying to bridge the gap, you know, cross the pond with these stories that are not only intergenerational, but specifically intercultural, because you growing up as literally an all-American boy, everybody wants to have that small town experience, you know, growing up on, you know, Green Acres or something like that, or Mayberry, because it's bucolic. Everybody knows each other. Everybody takes care of each other. The idyllic one, you know, the stereotypical American, you know, small town, loving family, a good school, a good church, good community. And then cornfields and running around, you know, with
and
your girlfriend.
Your Korean mom.
And then she's going to be able to cook your, you know, Korean foods and everything like that. But knowing you learning and being diligent in learning Korean and immersing yourself in Korean American culture, it was like, this is what we need, that cross-pollination. And you are one of those first, you know, in the early aughts. And I do remember the song, Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sunshine. And you're sitting there. It's like, oh my God, he's so beautiful.
He's
it's
so
like,
dreamy.
I just hope, I hope the girl of his dreams enters the bar and sweeps him away. Anyway, but again, just marking your path was really significant in seeing that. I think, you know, Kelly and I have always said ever since we were here in Hollywood, it's like we need to go out and tell people to breed because it is about people falling in love and collecting these stories that really are relational. It's because bottom line, we're all human.
Yeah.
And, you know, specifically your Korean American background are, you know, Heinz 57 Kelly here, and me and May being, you know, specifically Korean American and Japanese Filipino Okinawan. It's just like we all find out that we all pretty much relate the same way. So yeah, I just want to applaud you for
you know what, and also Daniel, maybe you can speak about this too, because back then when you did My Lovely Samsung, Korea was still at a point where they still weren't that open to Western culture, in the sense that they didn't like Koreans who didn't speak Korean, right? They were still very judgmental. I remember going to Korea as a kid, you know, during the summers, and my Korean wasn't so good, and I would be scolded by taxi drivers and people at the market telling me, what is wrong with you? You should be ashamed of yourself. And by your character being introduced in that K-drama that was hugely successful, kind of made it more acceptable, or at least, like, you know, people sort of tuned into that concept, perhaps, in some ways. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can't take any credit for that. I really think it was timing. I think I got super lucky. It was at a time in the culture when they were sort of, unbeknownst to them, kind of opening up to that idea.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the country of Korea, they've always loved American projects, American films. And they were kind of looking for that Richard Gere type character, I think. And I think I filled that for some people. Yeah. And the fact that I was Korean helped. But you're right. I mean, I remember we had to sort of lobby with the censorship board in Korea, because they wouldn't allow anyone to speak English as a principal character in a drama.
Oh,
and so I had to jump through a bunch of hoops, and I'm sure I had a bunch of doors open for me that I still to this day don't know about.
Huh.
But I auditioned many times, and I had to write letters to the studio. And I mean, I was just a young, hungry actor. I was doing stuff in New York off Broadway, and I was really chomping at the bit for my first part. And it was a process, but no, you're right. They were definitely more closed than they are now. And, it's definitely not because of me. I was just lucky to be a vehicle for that.
Yeah.
What were these letters that you wrote?
I still have them. I have one that was to the studio about my commitment to acting, about how I try to become I was just really starting out in acting. I was taking classes in New York. I was 24. And, you know, it was about my commitment to the craft and about what I can do with the character. And then there was one I had to write about my family, my mom, where she's from, being from Busan, being adopted after the war, that whole background. Mm-hmm. And the same thing was to the censorship board, just so they got an idea that I was in fact Korean. That was a big deal to them.
Yeah.
And that somehow all came together and worked in my favor.
But here's the thing, Daniel. I mean, it's amazing now what's happened in Korea, right? With television and film. I mean, the explosion worldwide.
K-pop.
It is
amazing. But the thing is, you know, having worked there since 04, 05, like, we always kind of knew. Like, there was times when even when I was just a model, you know, the quality of the editorial spreads, the quality of the photographers and even the commercial directors, the stuff you get back that, you know, I'd go shoot a commercial somewhere else and it just wasn't the same. And I'd do something in Korea and the quality was amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Into movies and TV dramas, the story, the writing was so cool. And so good. These directors, you know, the Bong Joon-ho's and the Park Chan-wook, they're all amazing. And
they're amazing.
It was a matter of time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. I've had one experience shooting one of my episodes of my talk show back then in Seoul. And the crew that was hired to do this was I felt like I was on a movie set or something.
Yeah.
It was so professional. It sort of blew my mind. Yeah.
Are there unions?
There is now. The beginning stages. That was the hardest part about working in Korea, especially for me being from the West for a long time, was to understand how hard we were going to work and how that was just going to be accepted. We would have nurses on set with sort of like vitamin B injections.
B12, shots. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because we'd work 3 days with no sleep, you'd shower instead of sleeping. We had multiple accidents on set because of it. I had a a terrible accident on set one night because of it that I still think about to this day.
What happened?
I was doing an action sequence with a young actor, and it was our third day awake and our third night awake. And it was meant to be a sort of, he walked away from me, then I walked away from him rather. And then I kind of turned around and like to look like a blind punch to his face. And we rehearsed it twice. And the first time he was too far, the second time he was too close, third time we got the distance right. And then something went wrong and I ended up breaking his orbital socket and whole cheekbone. And they had to put a metal plate in his face.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh my God. Wow.
That was a lot of, letters to his parents and a lot of time at the hospital and hoping I didn't just ruin this kid's career.
Right. Oh my God. That's traumatic.
Is he still active?
He is. He healed, luckily. And here's the thing. In typical Korean fashion, he came back to set that night and finished the scene from the opposite
side. Oh my God.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh my God. Of course. It's that work ethic.
That Korean toughness, man. That's a little extreme though. Wow.
Yeah, they don't fuck around.
Yeah. They do not fuck around. So Daniel, I want to kind of transition into our favorite subject, but one last question, which is Wheel of Time. You've been in that series for three seasons now. Is it going to a fourth?
We don't know.
You don't know that yet. Okay.
I would think it will. We just, you know how it is with, streaming's even stranger. Yeah. It's kind of hard to know where the show stands, what's happening. I think we probably will. I'm going in 2 weeks to South Africa to shoot my stuff for season three because the show is so huge that we shoot in units. Okay. So we're going to shoot my stuff with Rosamund Pike stuff in South Africa. Then we're wrapping season three for us. And I would imagine we'd hear something.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed for that. Good luck.
Yeah. And then now transitioning into your latest film in Korea.
Yeah.
And I can't believe you did a film about dogs. It's called Dog Days. Right.
Literally Dog Day in English and Korean.
Yeah. Dog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Korean is Dogdeji.
Yeah.
Dogdeji.
Okay. So this is coming out February 6th. Is that when it's coming out? Something like that?
February 7th in Korea.
Yeah.
It's fun. It was supposed to be a Christmas movie. I think they pushed it to Chuseok. But it's kind of like in the vein of like a Love Actually, that kind of film, but with dogs. It's about, people having certain habits and patterns in their life and not being able to look beyond those patterns. And sometimes a furry friend can change that for you. It's really cool to see this in Korea because, that dogs have been a controversial issue, put it that way, for a long time in Korea.
Yeah.
And now to have a feature film with dogs at the center of it is a clear step forward.
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. And let's talk about what just changed in Korea, which is the new ban on dog meat farms and restaurants, right? This is a big deal. It's a very big deal. And Daniel, you've been very much a part of this movement for a while. So first and foremost, your reaction to this, ban.
I got a call from my colleagues at Humane Society International when they found out. They've been in the trenches for a decade working on the dog meat trade issue.
Yeah.
I've been with them for, I think, 8 years now. We work closely with them, with K-Dog Rescue and with Dog Us Planet. We kind of hit it as a team. And it's been a long journey. I think you guys can all relate to this when you get to some level of being a public figure, you look for something to latch onto as a cause. And it was always a little difficult for me. I didn't have anything naturally that came to me. I just, I was searching for a while and then it just very easy when it came to me, I should just help puppies out. Cause I've grown up with dogs and it's always been something close to my heart. So yes, as far as I know, the ban on dog meat sales is done. consumption as well. And over the next 3 years, I believe, I could be wrong, but we are phasing out the farms. Which is a tricky issue because a lot of that is, it's people's livelihoods, one.
It's transitional, right?
It's transitional and it's generational. So you have families who have handed these farms down. And it's easy to demonize and it's understandable, but it's something that has to be approached with empathy and understanding. That's how we've, not me, but the change has been enabled because it's been approached from that angle, I think. It was bound to happen sooner or later. I didn't think it was going to be this soon, but I couldn't be more happy.
Well, I mean, let's talk about possibly why. One factor is the president, President Yoon, and the first lady. Yeah, the first lady. They have six rescue dogs. You got? Did you know that, Tamlin and Kelly? They're huge dog lovers. Huge.
Oh wow!
So they've. I know that they've been advocating for this to a certain extent, right? So that certainly helped. But you know, here's the thing I want to talk to all of you guys about, because I think this is important. It's, you know, at face value, of course, everyone's like, oh my God, of course we have to ban this, you know, practice. You can't eat dogs, right? Because they're pets. But this is a tradition that's, you know, been centuries old in Korea, maybe even thousands of years old. And so some people argue, well, listen, how is this different from eating a cow or a pig or a chicken, right? Because in Korea, they look at dogs as meat, right? Mm-hmm. Not the way we look at them, certainly, because you guys know how much I love my dogs. So it is one of those things where I started looking at comments after the news came out, and they were so racist. Yeah, because immediately people were like, what savages, you know, what barbarians, you know, how can they even do that? And so, you know, it really did sort of trigger a lot of racist comments about Koreans and Asians overall. So that's a difficult one to grapple with, right? I mean, when you kind of put it in that context of, well, this is a tradition that's been going on a long time, and how is it different from eating other kinds of meat?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. It's a tricky one. I've been asked many times. I think the comments and the racial things, I think that's a lot of emotion, you know, emotion based stuff that's bound to, I mean, this day and age, it's almost impossible to avoid that stuff, unfortunately. But with Korea, like you said, you know, I think looking at a country's history is very important. You know, and we're talking about a country of the history of a lot of war and occupation and times of severe hunger and starvation. And a lot of things like this are born from that. In Korean culture to this day, when you greet someone, you know, sometimes the third sentence is, have you had lunch?
Have you eaten?
And that's directly from times of, there were times when they hadn't. That's tied to that. And during those times, they did what they could to feed their people. And so if you think about it that way, you can empathize a bit more. As far as, you know, for me, when I'm asked the question about, you know, cows and pigs and chickens, I simply say, this is my cause. You know, this is what I'm focused on. I have a love for dogs. I've grown up with dogs, you know, and that's as far as I go with it. It's a tricky thing to answer, and every culture is different and they have different beliefs, and it's hard to satisfy everyone. So I just kind of keep it personal.
It must be really very, to keep it personal is the only way you can take a righteous stance, because you being an American of Korean descent, are you playing a Korean American in the film in Dog Days?
In Dog Days, yes. In Dog Days, yes.
So again, to ask for your position as to a banning in a country that you're literally is a motherland, and then you coming in as American, you're going to be, you know, saying stuff that people are going and targeting you for your answers. So to be very sensitive and to be very culturally aware of where you are from and where you're standing, how you stand, is absolutely the only thing that you can do. You're not dictating policy. You're not legislating change. You're just coming from a very personal place. And I think for May, Kelly and I, you're coming from a place of anti-concern, is that, you know, you're doing the best you can. And, you know, again, thank you for being so, so aware about not being able to satisfy everybody, but the cause of what you're doing is an evolution. It's an evolution. It's like, you know, as how we only, you know, correctly eat pig, cow and goat, but then, you know, people, you know, across our nation, you know, eat rabbit and squirrel and possum, and us West Coast people will go, oh my God. But then we're also moving to a more vegan experience and eating more bugs. So again, it's constantly evolving. And I just want to congratulate you on doing what you're doing in terms of Korea and its dog ban.
I'm sorry. Yummy. I am drawing the line at bugs.
Actually, crickets are yummy. Crickets
they're delicious. They are delicious.
They're like little crunchy bits. Yeah. Anyway.
They're crunchy bits. It's like bacon all the time.
Wait, sorry, Daniel. What did you say? I couldn't hear you.
What kind of bugs are we talking about here?
Usually crickets.
Mealworms specifically. Mealworms, crickets. Beetles, certain beetles. I mean, we can literally go down the bug hole or the rabbit hole there, but in certain societies, it's a mainstay.
So great, it's source, like, of protein. Oh. It's a great source of protein. That's why they're saying
other people are doing it.
Yeah, yay. Kelly's like, yay for them.
But again, we have a choice. Yeah, we have a choice.
Yeah, we do. Well,
I mean, I think on this issue, to be honest with you, you're right. Me being an American, and that's been. I think where walls were put up in the past, especially with groups from the States coming over and trying to demonize and, you know, take that angle, and that just wasn't working.
Yeah.
You know, everyone had, they had good intentions. It just wasn't working. The country wasn't ready for it. So I think that, having spent so much time in Korea as an American, I mean, I literally feel like it's my second home. And so I do understand both sides in a way.
Yeah.
You know, so I have a unique perspective as far as that goes, but it's still a tricky thing. Yeah. You know, I'm happy with this progress.
Yeah. What kind of backlash did you get specifically? Is that something that you could talk about? I mean, were there threats, or because this is, like you're saying, this is people's livelihoods, you know, you're dealing with their money and their families.
Yeah. I've never personally received backlash. I stay off comment sections. I don't, you know, if videos go up,
smart.
I've learned a long time ago not to even go into those sections. What I'm, you know, regarding the farms themselves, I think the issue we get when I've been a part of a couple, they call them kind of raids, but we're going in to try to negotiate with farmers.
Yeah.
To get some, for a long time, it was just how many animals can we get out? You know, it wasn't shutting down the whole farm. And now they're at a point where they're shutting down whole farms. And some of those farms have the infrastructure and are large enough. They've transitioned the farms into blueberry and strawberry farms and things like that. So the family is still able to function.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that's been a major issue, is that it is in fact their livelihood. So you are taking away their source of income.
Right.
And their family's source. And so what are they going to do? And you can't just step back and say, well, you shouldn't have been doing that in the first place. That's bad. Because that's not even a thing. No. Right.
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 We'll have to redirect.
A lot of interesting things happen. I mean, we've been able to get dogs out with money. Mm-hmm. We've been able to get dogs out with a case of Jack Daniels. You know, some of the farmers that are very rural, they don't want the things you might think they want, you know?
Huh.
It's been an interesting experience.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, you know, I have some data here. So they have South Korea has around 1,600 dog meat restaurants and almost 1,200 dog farms as of 2023. So they, you know, that's a lot of businesses that have to close down.
Yeah, for a small country.
Yeah.
But if you can redirect them into something that's going to be even more lucrative, then that gives them more incentive, right, to change. Otherwise, if you're asking them to take a loss, there's no reason for them to want to do it except, you know, for the penalties. And some people might just pay the penalties. Like, what kind of penalty is it? Is it jail time?
Is it jail time?
Financial? It's actual jail time.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'm not sure now what that would be, but in my experience, it's always been. I mean, it's all situational, right? So each place is different. Some farmers are just like, just give me the cash and the farm, take the dogs. You know, it's that simple. It's everything is different depending on which situation it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Kelly, to answer your question, it says the dog meat, if they're found guilty of raising dogs for meat or selling dog meat, they could serve a maximum of 2 years in prison. Ooh. So yeah, it's serious. It's serious. But again, I mean, these, and here's the other point that needs to be made that people may not understand is that a lot of these dog farmers and restaurateurs, they're older. Right. These aren't people in their 30s and 40s. These are people 60s, 70s, 80s. I mean, they're of that older generation.
Generation.
They can't start another career. What are they going to do? Right.
Right. So, are those the consumers as well? Or are young people also eating dog?
No, those are the it's very much an older generation thing. Yeah. And also, I'd like to, you know, clarify, it's you don't see it on the menu in Korea.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you go to specific districts.
Right.
Yeah.
My first experience with it was when I was shooting a film and we were doing night shoots and we were way out, I mean, hours outside of Seoul. And we were in this area where there were restaurants there and, you know, seen some for the first time. So it's not like, you know, it's everywhere in every restaurant. Right. I rarely see it, to be honest with you.
Right.
Okay. But it's, I would liken it to people who eat alligator here in the States or something like that. It's just a smaller country, so it's more concentrated.
But speaking of personal tie to this particular issue, Daniel has rescued dogs from these dog farms, from the new trade.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, what? Do you have six as well? Do you have six?
Yeah, he would love to have six. He would love to have six. You have two. Are they around? Can they make an appearance?
I can probably get one out. I'll see if she'll come out later. Julia might come out. I just brought one home actually from Korea 2 days ago.
Get out!
To my friends, my friend who's a chef here in Santa Monica and his wife who's a stuntwoman actor. And his name was, the firefighters found him on a street. So I think he was stray from maybe a farm or something. Golden Retriever. And we got him his shots and his surgeries and all that stuff. And he flew back with me on Asiana flight down below. And he's now in Beverly Hills.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Living the life.
Isn't that amazing?
Holy moly.
That is, I know. I love that story. I love the fact that these dogs are being saved. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That dog must be
what
the hell just happened to me. That's awesome. Thank you for doing that, Daniel.
In Korea, they have a program. If you volunteer, I think it's Korean Air and Asiana. Anyone who's flying back from Korea, you can volunteer to travel with the dog. And otherwise, it's hard for them to get the dogs sent over. But if you as a passenger volunteer to check in a dog, they'll bring that dog to the airport in Korea.
Look at Kelly Hu's new job.
How did I sign up?
So again, repeating. Sorry, I interrupted you, Dan. So Asiana and Korea Airlines have those two programs.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't affect your checked baggage allowance. You can still check two or three depending on what you're flying. And then you basically check the dog in, sign some papers as if it's yours, but they all know what's happening. You fly, say, to LAX and you land here, go to the oversized baggage area where the animals come out, take them through customs and it's no problem. And then the family who's adopting the dog will meet you at the airport and you hand them off.
Oh my God. I love
Look at
that.
Kelly Hu's face. Oh my God.
I love that so much.
Henny Hu project, you know, to get the dog.
I know. Daniel and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago at the Clippers game about how this would be so great for people, business travelers, especially who go to back and forth to Korea all the time. And, you know, they have like a carry on or whatever, but they could easily do this and bring a dog back.
It's totally a win-win-win for any business person to up their brand. It's like you put up a TikTok.
I'll bring a dog
IG
back.
Live video of a rescue and how you can participate.
We find links and post it, please.
I can send all the information to May and then you guys can, if you're ever in Korea, please bring one back. But
are you kidding? I'm going now.
I know. And Daniel offered, as we all know, I lost Eggy back in October. And Daniel has offered May whenever you're ready. You know, we'll get you one. And so, I mean, that's definitely something that in the back of my head. I know. I mean, once you have two, you can have three. I mean, it doesn't matter. I think it just doesn't matter. I see why President Yoon has six. You know, easy to get up there. So, but yeah. So,
here's my question, though. You know how there are so many people who are like, oh, they have to have a purebred dog, or they have to have, you know, some sort of fancy kind of lap dog. Like, oh, I know, right? But what kind of dogs are they all purebred dogs? Are they like the fancy kind, or are they all mixed?
It's a mix of everything, and depending on where they're coming from. So a lot of the puppy mill dogs are purebred because they're breeding for that reason, right? The people want the dogs of that are purebred. Very few pure golden retrievers will be on the farms, but every once in a while you'll find one.
Oh, you know, where there's one. She's coming. Who is this?
This is Julie.
Juliet? Oh, oh my girl. Hi, girl. Hi, sweetie. Look at that. She's like, I'm not letting go of my ball.
I'm not letting
her safety ball.
Oh,
because she was on the farm by herself for years. She was raised there, and so she disconnects. So whenever she gets excited, she puts this in her mouth.
Oh my God! I just seriously, what do you do? I mean, what do you do about that? Look at her face. Look at her face.
She's acclimated quite well. How old was she? How old was she?
In the beginning, she was three, and now she's six. She was very raw, but Daddy's trained her, and she's gotten much better. And
I just want to do that. Oh, my God. Daniel, we said we were going to have a doggy play date, so we still have to do that. Because he has another.
I want to bring him back to her.
He has two. Remember, he has two of these.
Two. Yeah, Roscoe is my other one. He was on a meat farm, too.
Yeah.
And he's my old boy. He's 12 and he's been with cancer for 2 years. He's beat it. He's in remission. He's a little warrior.
Unbelievable. I know. Aren't they? You know, I remember talking to you about this because, you know, we're like this. We're both very much alike when it comes to the dog situation. There are days when I just look at my dog and I'm like, I don't even know what to do. Like, I'm literally paralyzed because the dog is so fucking cute. I'm like, I don't know what to do. And Daniel was like, oh my God, me too. He's like, you wouldn't believe the things I say to my dogs.
If it was recorded, like, out of context, what I say to my dogs. let me tell you the weirdest shit that I do.
Oh my God.
I think it's so funny that I threaten their lives, but I give them an exact time the next day that I'm so I tell them tomorrow it's on. It's tomorrow. Tomorrow's the last day. That's it. 8 o'clock tomorrow. It's all over. This whole thing you see.
It's over. Done. Yes.
You're done.
Yeah. You're done.
Oh,
you're like,
oh my God. I know.
Oh,
I mean, look,
gosh.
There's a reason why we love dogs so much, because they are clearly sent from a heavenly place to teach us all about unconditional love, living in the moment, you know, just being present, being grateful for every moment, right? Never judging. I mean, the dog is the perfect creature, I have to say.
There's some
I
side eye from
dogs. Teaching me patience. I got a rescue. My dog came from this woman who was like living with 27 dogs in her car. And so my dog's a little not right in the head. So, yeah, I'm still trying to get mine to like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she might like me, but she's just not. She's scared. She's still scared of me.
Yeah.
Does she need a companion? 2 years.
See, Daniel's got it right. He's got two. You all need two of your loved creatures. So again, next time May, your next trip to dog heaven, you have to pick up two. And
yeah,
you need a companion.
Whenever you're ready, let me know.
I know. Yeah. I'm telling you. It feels not quite right without two in the house. I mean, I love Sugi to death, of course, and she loves being spoiled, but. Two is a good number. And let's all agree. And I, of course, you know, you don't have to, of course, we all agree on this, but the idea of adopting and not shopping.
Yes. Thank
you. Not getting the perfect little puppy that has been like, you know, sort of bred and, you know, and then bought for thousands of dollars. That to me, I will never understand. I'm not trying to be judgy, but I am being judgy.
No, actually, you got to call out what's being called out, because Daniel already mentioned the term before. It's like when you're hearing about puppy mills in Korea and knowing about this new legislation about the banning against dog puppy mills, there are those puppy mills that exist in the United States because they're for vanity projects. They're for purebred. Yeah. And it's like it's right. as... you know, distasteful, for whatever word that you choose to describe it.
It's true.
And so to be able to say without judgment, this is an evolution for us as human beings to take care of domesticated animals in a more humane way is the only way to go.
Absolutely.
So to be able to be on the right side of history, as, you know, Daniel, you know, you're doing it for dogs with not only the, you know, the dog ban legislation, but for a film like this, it's like, who knew that God or whoever, you know, destined in your career that you're going to do a dog movie at the same time that this legislation had passed? It's like, you're going to be in this position to speak about both things at the same time.
That's true.
And knowing that we're evolving it together in specifically in Korea. And it's like around the world as how we can get better as human beings is how we treat our animals. So, and you going, you know, you being a pioneer in Korean American representation, it's like, that's, you know, that's what I think I'd like to just be able to call out and celebrate here at this time, because, you know, you being humble and saying you're lucky. Yeah, you're lucky, but you're doing the work too. So bravo to you. Bravo to you all the way, brother.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I can vouch because of experience that the rescue dogs, there's something special inside of them.
100%. There is,
there's a real thankfulness that comes through. Once you get through, I mean, they all have their quirks, right? Because they've been through so much trauma.
Yeah.
But once they latch on and they understand that you are now their mom or dad,
they're different.
They're different.
They know.
Yeah. It's kind of forever.
Forever.
Oh, yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever. Forever.
Yeah. Oh, look at. Shut up. Just shut
Julie, the fucking door.
Just shut up. Oh my God, Juliet. You're so pretty. You're such a pretty girl. Oh my God, look at us. This is what happens. This is what happens,
oh my God.
Right?
I'm sorry.
Okay, so Daniel, one question, and you do not have to answer it, of course.
Yes.
The news broke out about 2 months ago. It got out about you and your nuptials. Oh.
I got married.
Yes. Now it came out as if you had just
black armbands all around the United States. I'm telling you.
No. Hearts were breaking around the world when this news came out 2 months ago. But it came out as if it had just happened, right? As if it was like, wow, oh my God, Daniel Henney just got married. But that wasn't actually the case, right?
It was last year.
It was last year.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The media is crazy. You know, we were just, I've always been a very private person and it's always been a strange thing to me how, you know, being in the public eye means you have to reveal everything about yourself. I just find that a very strange notion, you know, but, I think in hindsight it worked out timing wise. The way it was presented to us was not great. We basically, the story was going to break and we didn't have a choice. It was going to come out. And so we were just like, all right, let's see what happens. But it's great. And my wife, Rue, is wonderful. My life partner, she's much more my better half than me.
Aww.
And she's been the greatest thing I think that's happened to me besides these wonderful rescue dogs.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
It's nice that it's out there. And I think, it's up and up from here.
Did you not want to go public to protect her?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was the main thing. I don't know the chronology of our dating. It's been a while off and on here and there. But, God, it must have been 6-ish years ago or something now where there was something that came up because we weren't together at the time, you know, but there were some pictures that came up. We had the same group of friends. We hung out a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was just the response was pretty intense. And at the time, I was into her. And I was like, I thought this thing was going to get going. Let's get this thing cooking, you know, let's date. And she definitely stepped away because of it.
Oh, because of it.
Mm. Yeah. And I can respect that because I understood like this isn't for everyone.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so after that, I was just like, well, if and when we do get together, I'll just try to protect her as much as possible.
Aww. I think what people in the U.S. might not understand is just how rabid a fan base they are in Asia. But like, I get it. Like when people found out that Jackie Chan got married, there were girls that like committed suicide and stuff. Like nuts.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
There's been some craziness.
Wow.
She had a lot of stuff on, because nowadays with the social media, where the comments are just right there, that people can just, it's ridiculous. People can just say anything and press send and there you go. And you can just hurt someone so badly.
Yeah. And she didn't ask for it. So
Wow.
No. And words are powerful and that's, it's not fair.
Yeah.
Do you guys do social media?
We do. Yeah. I don't use it as much as I used to. It's a very useful tool, I think.
Yes, it is.
In certain ways, but it can be. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, it can be really, really harmful too. I think I always say this to my friends. I'm like, you know, I think 50, maybe 100 years from now, we'll look back on this time and we'll be gone, but people will look back on this time as one of the most impactful times in human history.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We have like the Industrial Revolution and all that stuff, but like the internet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is so profound, and I think we're still trying to figure it out, like what it's going to do for us and what we're going to do with it. And it's just
it's
a learning curve.
And remember, now we're dealing with AI and the impact that's going to have on the world. So there's a lot of shit happening, that's for sure. But
go ahead.
That I do plan to live for another 50 years.
Go, you go, girl.
She will. I know you will.
They're going to be over 100.
Yeah, technology. Yeah.
As long as you're healthy. I don't want to be that 100 and like sick and in pain. I mean, that's no life.
You know what the funny thing is? You know, the funny thing is, Kelly, you're going to live for another 50 or 100 years. You're going to look exactly the same.
I know. Yeah. I was just going to say.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
But for what you were talking about technology and social media, it's like we're all searching for connectivity because that's the basic human need, desire, want. And looking back and going full circle, it's not a hard push. But, you know, you look to your animals, you look to the dogs that, you know, you are advocating so passionately for, and how all four of us love our animals like they are our children. It's like and they do it without words.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. They do it with a ball in their mouth, so they're not able to articulate anything. But that sense of, you know, energy. And I just, you know, again, as long as we can just look at each other and say, you know, I love you, and, you know, all power to you for whatever you want to do in life. That's the most important thing. Yeah.
And I have to be thankful for the internet because I got my dog, Julie. I saw her online first, and, you know, these things are really amazing things that are happening because of it, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's good too. So we're just figuring it out.
Well, we'll wrap this up because we don't want to take much more of your time, Daniel, even though we could talk for hours, I'm sure. One last story about Daniel and about his heart, actually. So I invited him to come to the Korean American Coalition Council's annual gala one year. And this was several years back. In the States, in Washington, D.C. And he very kindly accepted. And then I asked him if he would be willing to be auctioned off to raise money.
Was I?
Yes. And because of his heart and his kind generosity, he said yes. So that night at this black tie gala, they started, you know, kind of getting the bids. The room went fucking crazy. And I mean, like, it was like a Tom Jones concert. I swear to God, if it went on longer, there would have been panties flying on the stage. And at one point, I remember, Daniel, just, you were blown away so much. You looked back at us, right, at the table. You were like going, yeah. is going on.
Oh, what did you do? Yeah, what'd you get me into?
Pretty liquored up by that point. It was getting a little out of hand. It was intense.
Oh my God. So all these ladies, of course, were bidding on him. So we got one bid, the highest bid. And then because he's so fucking generous, he said, I'll do a second one for the same amount.
Yes. Yeah,
for the
same.
So we raised twice as much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I read about this. Yeah, when it happened, it was like because of again, you know, it's so popular and you're doing it for a good cause.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. I mean, I was just excited to be in Washington D.C. and I'm a small town kid and I get to go there. They gave me this beautiful award, and I'm just pinching myself. So I'm on stage. Pelosi's in the audience. I'm like, what the hell?
Oh my God!
Oh yeah.
Try to raise some money.
I don't think we're allowed to do that kind of thing these days.
Probably not.
You know what I've had to do? They auctioned me off to cook them dinner.
No kidding. How'd that go?
I guess they did well because I had to put a pox on it. I go, I can't. Because they initially did it for 10 and then they upped it to 20 person. And
wait,
I go, oh, I don't.
You can't do that.
I don't even come back way at home. It's like, my God, what do you want me to do? But anyway, it's.
Well, the funny thing is that, the first bidder was a friend of mine, but that auction item of her winnings, that just happened years later because the coordination was so difficult. So that literally just happened. And then the second one, Daniel, I think the couple came to visit you on set somewhere, something like that.
Yeah, visit me on set. Was it Criminal Minds?
Yes.
I can't remember now. It must have been Criminal Minds.
Something. Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then we had COVID, right? So the whole world stopped for basically a year and a half.
Right.
Yeah.
What a weird moment that was. So it's taken a while to pay my debts, but I think I'm paid in full.
No, but we still talk about that moment. It's going to go down in history as one of the greatest moments. So
if I remember correctly, I think it was $15,000 was the initial bid.
Yes.
And then you match it and it was like
so it was 30.
30, 32 something yep. was the total. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the story. It was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot. So, I think I'll take all credit for that.
I blame the booze.
I know you can
complain that night.
All right. Well, listen, Daniel, I am so, so happy that I finally got you to come on the show. And you know, I adore you. You know that you're my tong tang. So, but I'll see you soon. I hope.
Thank you so much. And you guys, I wasn't lying. I'm a huge fan of both of you.
We adore you. Thank you. Happy New Year.
This would be fun. This would be really fun. Just dinner.
May arrange it.
With our dogs.
By the way, we never get together in person. Like we've only been all three of us in the same room once since we started.
And whenever Kelly comes back to LA, that's when we have to do this.
Yeah.
Wait, where are you, Kelly?
Right now I am in LA, but I moved to Las Vegas.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. To be near my mom. That's a whole other episode.
Yeah.
What about Glendale? Are you here in LA?
I'm in Glendale. Yeah. I'm a Valley girl. So totally in and out.
In May, you're down by,
on my island. On Naples Island, in southern tip of Long Beach. So you know, I've told you, you need to come and visit and check it out because it's a magical wonderland.
Yeah. I would love to. My mom and dad are coming in tomorrow. They're staying for a little over a week. And then on the 29th, I'm off to South Africa. We'll make it happen.
Let's make a plan for sure.
Oh, one last thing. Your University of Michigan?
No. I went to a small liberal arts school, like 40 minutes from U of M.
Okay, so but in the Michigan area, you went to school.
Oh, yeah,
I was going to congratulate you on this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, on the championship?
Michigan. Yeah.
It's a big win for the state of Michigan. And also the Lions are pretty good, too. So
God, that's a sentimental one, for that team to be winning for Detroit. So I'm a huge football fan. So, of course, I watched all six games this past weekend.
Oh, my God. But, it was a win-win with Detroit and Rams because it was Jared Goff. And it was like,
that backstory was interesting, too. So, I know. We all love sports, too.
I'm still very much a Michigan boy. We spend every summer there. We have a little place on the Great Lakes, so we – take the dogs up and they swim. It's a whole thing. It's great.
And I should mention, Daniel, has a best friend, Maddie, right? And they've been best friends since they were 14. And they mm-hmm. still, like, he lives here. He lives in LA, and they're, like, it's best single? Buddies. It's so, it's so, yeah, he is, sing- is he single?
As of recently, no.
Oh, okay.
He's,
they're all getting scooped up, those boys.
He's such a nice yeah. guy. I really like him a lot. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, he's super. Yeah. It's nice to, you know, it's hard for, as we get older, I think, to have those deep relationships yeah. and it's harder to make friends, which is so weird. You know, we were kids. Remember how it was so easy? So easy. Just, you want to be my friend. It was so simple.
Yeah.
And now we've got all this stupid ass baggage where we got to sift through before we can, you know, get through our own shit first. And then,
oh yeah.
And it's like,
we have less time to waste.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be really thinking about how you spend your time, and you don't want to spend it with people who are not going to be worth it.
No, absolutely yeah. not. It's, I agree. It's quality over quantity for sure.
Yes.
So, yes. And Maddie is definitely quality. He's a really good guy. And from Michigan, you know, Midwestern boys, right? Just like,
absolutely.
Good. Salt to the earth. Yeah. Salt to the earth. Good, from the soul. So that's what I'm trying to say. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap this up. Daniel, thank you so much. We will see you soon.
It was a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for the quality and the quantity of time.
And I'll listen to Glory of Love tonight, thinking about you.
That's great. Okay, so if you weren't in love with Daniel Henney before, I hope you are totally in love with him now.
So I think lots of people are going to look forward to dog days. Be sad about dog days.
No.
So looking forward to Daniel Henney's dog days.
Yes.
So much to celebrate. I mean, with the news about Korea and the banning of the dog meat coming out at the same time as his film. I mean, what perfect, you know,
perfect
opportunity.
Synergy. Yeah, exactly. It was timing couldn't be better on that. So, so listen, we will put the information about, you know, helping bring a dog from Korea on a flight if you want.
I can't wait.
Obviously, and all other, but I will not.
I believe Seoul is the number two destination for world travelers. There was a poll out. I think Tokyo's first, and then Seoul is second.
Really?
And then I think Jeju Island is like within the top five as well.
Jeju, so okay.
If there's any reason to go to Korea and do a good thing, I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, and while you're there, if you want to get a little work here and there, you know, they're the best.
Totally. Can we post some of those links to those?
I know. I've said to my girlfriends.
Refresh button.
Yeah,
refresh
I've said button. To my Korean American girlfriends, I'm like, we gotta just fucking go all together and just go on like this fucking medical tour. You know, totally group rate. So anyway, see, many reasons to go to Korea, but we want to thank Daniel for sharing his time with us. He's a busy guy, but he's so sweet. Love him. He's like my brother. So thank you, Daniel. And thank you all for watching. Remember, if you like the show, subscribe, rate us, review us, send us messages. We read all those messages. So and follow us on social media, of course. Okay. All right, ladies. Love you.
We love you, Moo.
We'll see you next time.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Bye.